Well, folks, you know what that sound means. It is just after 4 o'clock on Thursday afternoon, and you're tuned into Everything Under the Sun, the Soper Sun's weekly radio program right here on KDNK. I'm your host today, James Steinler, and I'm joined by co-host Arthur Cherith. How are you, Arthur?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Doing real good. And Skylar's in the house as well. How are you, Skylar Stark Ragsdale?
I am doing great. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. Skylar and I worked tirelessly with our wonderful cohort of freelancers to dish out a 20-page paper this week. It's chock full of hard news and some fun features. Today we're going to be talking about one of the book review, actually, that you can find on page 14. And it's a book review about Jim Dukes, the legendary burrow whisperer, as I like to call him, and his book, Dances with Donkeys, the memoir of a half-assed cowboy, which, folks, I got to tell you, you got to read it. It's really good. But we have none other here in the studio with us, Mr. Jim Duke. How are you, Jim?
Doing well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for making your way up here from Mancus.
Sure.
You drove up specially for the occasion.
Absolutely. I'd love to come back to Carbondale anyway, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You consider Carbondale to be your roots, even though you came here later in life?
Spent most of my life here, 35 years. So, yeah, been here more than anywhere else.
Okay.
Yep.
Great. And the drive up from Mancus was okay? You went over Lizard Head? And
doesn't matter which way you go, they're all beautiful. Yeah, I came over Lizard Head this morning.
Nice. So. And you said you came up on a little bit of rain.
Yeah, right in Cedar Ridge. And God, it's been dry down there. We had a sprinkle. I mean, our sprinkles down there, you can count the raindrops and, you know, see the spots on the porch, and then it's done.
Yeah.
So it's been crazy this year.
Yeah,
really dry.
Same here. I mean, and at least in Glenwood, and I you know, that's where I'm at these days. It rained quite a bit last night.
That's what I hear.
Oh man, it was so nice, and then it rained into this morning too. How about here in Carbondale, Skylar?
Yeah, Carbondale as well. I know, it's great. Smoke cleared, which is very nice.
Yeah, and there's
that was rough yesterday.
Yeah, there's a lot of smoke from the Utah fires, I guess, coming in. And then also we had a big fire, and I don't know the...
Right across from Rifle.
Yeah, outside of Rifle at the Dry Creek fire. It was at 350 acres as of yesterday. I haven't checked today. But everyone stay safe out there and pray for some more rain.
Boy, seriously. We live right in the middle of a big pinyon juniper patch, and I've been keeping my fingers crossed.
Yeah.
I've done some fire mitigation, but gosh, if the winds are like they are lately, it's just there's nothing's going to stop a big fire down there.
Yeah, no, and the wind that's the driver for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, you weren't down in Durango for the 416 fire,
or
down
no?
That way. Yeah, that was a bad one.
Yeah, we actually that was the year of the pandemic, wasn't it?
It was before the pandemic,
okay.
I think. Yeah,
because when we moved in there, the whole area was surrounded by fires that year.
Okay.
But I don't think it was the Durango fire. But there was only one access into Mancus.
Huh.
And we were supposed to close, and the insurance companies are like, well, we're not going to touch that place. You're surrounded by fire.
Yeah.
We had to scramble.
Oh, yeah.
It was pretty serious.
Yeah. Well, we're getting a little bit off track
here.
And we won't help each other with that. I feel like I could talk to you all day, Jim, about anything. And but we're here today to talk about your memoir, Dances with Donkeys. And it really is, I've had the pleasure of reading it, and it really is an inside scoop of your life story, and pretty thorough, I would say. Do you leave much out of the book?
Not near enough. I still wonder why I put a lot of that stuff in there, like true confessions or something, I don't know.
You know, that's something that resonated with me about it, and we talked on the phone, I think it was earlier this morning, but, you know, I just felt like it was really honest, and I think that makes for a lot more of an entertaining read and moving as well.
Well, you know, I also, part of the book, I mainly wanted to be entertaining, but I also wanted people to learn from my mistakes.
Okay.
And for animals to have a better life because of it, so I didn't want to hold any blows back there as far as things I did wrong that I wish I hadn't and that other people could avoid.
Well, and it sounded like through the book, you also learned quite a few lessons from some of those animals that you
more than I've ever learned from people, yeah.
Yeah. And really, you fancied mules and donkeys.
I just about a year ago got my first horse in over 30 years, yeah.
Huh.
And he's a Mustang from the Mesa Verde herd, so. Yeah.
Okay, wow. Did you get him through the BLM kind of deal?
No, it's actually a much better program than the BLM.
Okay.
The Mesa Verde group gentle gathers their animals. They start feeding them, and they slowly build a corral up around where they're feeding them. They've never been chased with ATVs or choppers. They've never had a really bad human experience. So it's a really good head start, good place to get a wild horse.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, and your appreciation for these animals started really even before you had a chance to work with them. Sounds like you were pretty young when you first had an inkling that you might want to move west
sure.
and become a cowboy.
We had a family cabin in Boulder County ever since I was a toddler. And by the time I was 12, I had hiked into town and started hanging around the livery stable until they finally just put me to work and I started guiding. And I've been in and out of animals ever since. Horses and mules and donkeys.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. And you didn't quite make it to the end of high school.
No. I guess it was... I wasn't quite 18 yet, and I just wrecked my second car. Rolled a Volkswagen Bug out in a cornfield playing beer can polo or something like that. So my dad helped me straighten out the roof enough to. No, I didn't put that part in there. But they helped me straighten out the roof enough to get a windshield in it, and my dad gave me $100 and said, "You always wanted to be a cowboy. Sounds like a good idea." So, huh. And I had relatives. My brother-in-law was in Texas and Austin starting a new vet clinic, and he had a ranch, so I had a connection to start with down there. So that okay. helped.
Yeah, and you were, about 16 then when you went down to Texas?
The first time I did, but I came back and went to high school again for most of a year, and then I dropped out and went back down when I was 17. And,
okay.
And after working for he was a large animal vet and a rancher, like I said, so I worked for him for a while and made a connection with a really crooked bunch of so-called ranchers. They were called Captain Credit Cattle Company, and they had their own appraisers, and they would go by these huge ranches, over-appraise them. I don't know what their scam was, but they made money by buying new ranches. And so me and another
weren't
old...
Weren't some of them like ex-football players or something
most
like that?
Most of them were ex-pro ball players. Yeah. They had Vegas connections. A lot of them ended up going to jail. But that was fun. I got all over the state, you know, dressing up these ranches they'd buy and building fences and making it look like an operating ranch.
Okay.
And then it was in about 1975, the fall of 75, the bottom really fell out of the beef market. And my brother-in-law had a couple hundred mama cow operation in Page, Texas, right on the edge of Lost Pines National or State Park, which is loblolly pines. They look a lot like ponderosas. Part of this ranch, you could almost feel like you're in Colorado. But anyway, he decided not to sell any of his calf crop that year. Got in touch with me and asked me to come back and work his ranch for the wintertime because he had to run the vet clinic, and we were going to have to feed all year long with that many cattle on the site. So that's what led in to the story that you asked me to tell, which
yeah,
is one of my favorite stories too. But that fall, when the beef price went down so bad, he actually sold one cow that had a bad eye. Even though he's a veterinarian, it wasn't worth the effort of doctoring any of his own cattle. And we had a cow go through auction. It sold for $5. So he didn't even cash the check. It's framed up in my sister's house down in Austin. But like every dark cloud, there's a little bit of a silver lining, which in this case didn't help your average Texas rancher much. But I had long before discovered that I was in prime psilocybin country. And doubling the number of your cattle in the herd also double the number of cow turds,
right,
which the mushrooms grow on.
You could find the psilocybin mushrooms.
They were just going gangbusters that year. So, in addition to being a lot more, the whole area was so grubbed off that they were the tallest feature in the pasture. So you
can see them long way and they off. Don't grow too tall.
No, they're pretty short. But after a good rainstorm, I could fill up the bed of a pickup truck
fast
as I could pick them.
That is so wild.
I mean, even before that, they were always pretty easy to find. But when the grass was taller, they were harder to find. So I started, when I was down there feeding cattle by myself, I got in the habit of just filling the truck up with hay. And then I'd put it in granny gear, and I'd crawl in the back and start flaking hay off and just let the truck idle through these fields without any driver.
Yeah.
So I started using that practice to harvest mushrooms, because I could sit on the roof and I could see down through the grass a little bit further.
Right.
And I'd jump off and go pick a few and jump back up on the truck again. And that's when I finally figured out that when I was picking that many mushrooms, the spores are kind of purple and my fingers would turn dark blackish purple, and I was absorbing it.
Oh, and
the thin skin between my fingers.
So you're feeling it a little bit too.
Yeah, I was feeling a lot more than I realized I was.
Whoa.
Until one day I got off the truck. I was out picking a good patch of shrooms, and this one patch of shrooms just looked just so beautiful I could hardly stand it. I was sitting there admiring it, and I found myself sort of transposed into this miniature scene, sunning in the shade of a mushroom cap on a cow pie beach line. And all of a sudden, I got bumped from behind. If I hadn't been so quick, I would have run myself over. I was right in front of the damn truck.
That truck, yeah. And,
anyway, they were so pretty. I used to actually gather the whole turd sometimes, and I would try to shellac them and dry them out. I thought they'd be good ornaments and stuff.
That's funny.
Nobody really appreciated the old cow turd on their desk or when you sell it. They didn't make a very good gift in the long run. But.
Right, yeah. I mean, unless, I don't know. But you also ended up piling, and because you're real honest in this book, and you let it all, you kind of bear it all, and even past what some people might call criminal activity.
Oh, yeah.
But you also brought a load up from Texas.
Yeah, I used to bring them up almost every year.
That's how
my hippie buddies up in Boulder County around Allen's Park. I was pretty popular when I came up from Texas. But that particular year, I had been driving into the Elgin co-op almost every day and picking up a trailer load of cottonseed cake for more supplemental feeding for the cattle. Mm-hmm. And come spring, they always sell laying pullets and different kinds of poultry. And so I would buy a chick or two just for company back. And pretty soon I had a pretty good flock going. And come heat of summer, I'd already started being sort of migratory, living in the Texas in the wintertime, coming back up to Colorado in the summertime. But I had all these birds, and I didn't want to leave them behind.
Yeah.
And I was driving a little Rambler sedan. So I came up with this brilliant brainstorm. I was going to hide all of my shrooms under the back seat of the car.
Yeah.
And then cover the seat with layers of newspaper and some carpet and haul all the chickens up. And I had chickens, ducks, turkeys.
And who's going to want to dig through that?
Yeah, and I was like, oh, this is totally safe. They can't just let them out on the road. Nobody's going to dig through this shit. So
yeah.
Probably wasn't the most brilliant thing I ever did. But almost immediately, I had kind of taped and stapled an old fish net in between the front and back seat.
Uh-huh.
But the bigger birds, the geese, they've got a couple of geese. They were beating up on the chickens. It was a real shit show, basically. So I finally had to tear that down, let them spread out throughout the whole car. And I had a pet raccoon with me, too, that I'd brought along. But it got along with the chickens. It was pretty much raised with them. But I was somewhere in central Texas, pulled into a gas station. And this, you know, back in those days, they didn't have self-service. You always had the guy come out and pump your gas and clean your windshield and stuff. And he came out and was looking at me like, you know, it was the most normal thing in the world to have a carload of chickens, like maybe I was a chicken salesman or something, you know. Started checking out my birds and looks at my rooster and he goes, that's a gamecock, isn't it? And I said, no, it's an Araucana. And he kind of went on about his business, checking him out some more. And he goes, that's a gamecock. Yeah. He goes, how much you want for him? And I said, it's an Araucana. He's not for sale. You know, and he kept trying to buy it. And I said, finally, finished doing the windshield, checking the oil. I was like, I'm out of here. So take off down the road. Later that night, getting dark, and I've been driving. You know, I can't really stop. But I had one turkey that was kind of my best buddy of the flock. He was sitting on my shoulder right by the passenger seat, right by the driver's seat, trying to stay aloof from the fray. And turkeys are pretty much the pool sharks of any poultry yard. They don't go running around scratching and pecking at everything. They're really careful and pick their shots really carefully. And he took a special interest in the little blue light on my dashboard that went on every time I hit the brights.
You're right.
So I'm driving through the panhandle, and every time I hit the brights, you know, he'd take special interest. And he finally jumped down and he pecked that little blue filter out. And this was way before the days of electronic dashboards. And it was just a little blue filter covering a really bright bulb.
Yeah.
And he pecked it out, so I had that thing shining in my face. And I kept pulling little pieces of paper and sticking it in there, and I'd hit the brights again, and he'd peck it out. So I was getting pretty exhausted, and I tried pulling over. There's a lot of pretty nice little roadside parks in Texas on their highways, so I pulled over in one of those, and I was going to try to take a nap. But every time a semi-truck pulled up in the distance, my rooster thought it was the sun rising.
Yeah.
And that is amazingly loud in the confines of a small car.
Yeah. I believe it.
Plus, it was getting pretty ripe in there, and you can't roll the windows down very far with 35 birds in your car.
Yeah.
So I finally had to get up, and I immediately regretted not selling that damn rooster at gas stations before. But I kept on driving. By the time I got to Raton Pass, I was totally exhausted. But I really couldn't stop. I had to keep going. And I was in the habit those days of saving a joint for sunrise. And it was just about to be sunrise. So I'm coming up on Raton Pass. And I hit the thickest damn fog I've ever seen up there. Hmm. I still took a couple of hits. I wasn't going to see the sunrise. But pretty soon the fog's getting thicker and thicker. And I'm coming down the pass on the Colorado side. And I'm going down the interstate probably 15, 20 miles an hour, just bent over my steering wheel trying to see through the damn fog. And all of a sudden, a semi-truck goes blowing by me about 75 miles an hour. I look in the rearview mirror, and I can see fine. It had just been condensation built up on my windshield. And so I obviously had a pretty sudden paranoid panic attack, and wished I could find my way back into the fog. And I was thinking, oh, God, I'm glad it was a trucker and not a trooper. But I got put on the windshield wiper and I could see fine. I finally made it up to Allen's Park, but it happened to be July 4th of 1976, the bicentennial.
Oh, yeah.
So I pulled into town, carload of chickens and turkeys and geese and all that, and a bunch of shrooms, which I started passing out around town. So I think that's probably the best non-explosive fireworks show they've ever had in Allen's Park.
Huh.
And even to this day, when I drive into Allen's Park, any of the old timers that remember it, they're like, packing any poultry?
So, yeah. Oh man, that's the best. Well, in the book, Jim, it starts with you younger, but it really goes through a good part of your life, for most of your life, I'd say.
Pretty much, yeah.
I will say, just so you know, because we're loving your stories, but we only got about 10 minutes left. So I talk too much. No, man. And I should have said it before going on there, but we got to watch our cussing too, but all good.
Oh, yeah, sorry about that. You printed that poop scoop.
Oh, well, we can write whatever we want in the newspaper pretty much. Within reason.
Yeah.
You've written for our paper before. I know we talked about it just before we came in today, but you also wrote for the Roaring Fork Review. But I want to talk a little bit more about Dances with Donkeys. And for listeners who are just tuning in, This is Everything Under the Sun, the Soper Sun's weekly radio program. Today we're speaking with Jim Duke about his memoir, Dances with Donkeys, the memoir of a half-assed cowboy. And you can catch Jim this Saturday at White River Books, this Saturday, June 27th at 6:30 p.m. You can hear some really funny stories and some really, and also get to know a sweet side of Jim, I would say, too. Because he is a true caregiver and animal caregiver, I'd say, for sure. Jim, tell us a little bit about this writing process. You're a good storyteller, that's clear. Were you telling a lot of these stories before you decided to write a book?
You know, not really. I would say, for most of my writing career, I was your typical pissed off letter to the editor writer. And made a lot of enemies and, just stirred things up most of the time. And so it wasn't until John Fahey got me writing a column that I just started writing for fun and just really started enjoying it. So I started out writing a column for that the weekly journal out, I think it was out of Basalt, wasn't it? I think the Aspen Daily was in charge of that publication.
Yeah.
But I had a biweekly column called Kiss My Ass. So
that's right.
That's when I started coming up with all these stories, just reminiscing my past and
okay.
Mostly donkey and mule stories.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And you had, in this book, Dances with Donkeys, there was at least one poem about the Ship of Fools that I really liked. And did you write that recently or was that written a while ago?
That was during my drunken, recently divorced years when I was hanging out at the Ship of Fools.
Yeah. And you happened to meet your current wife.
Yeah, there. At the Ship of Fools. She came in on a date with my best friend.
Yeah. And she played hard to get. You had to really try to win Kathy over.
She knew way too better than to deal with the likes of me. I had to work really hard to convince her I was okay underneath all that grunge. So, yeah.
So how about when you decided to put these stories down, were you able to pull a lot from those those columns that you had written, or was it starting the process over?
Well, it was a friend of mine from college who's a very successful author and part owner of a publishing company who had been reading them. And he just said, you ought to put these into a book of short stories. Mm-hmm. So that was easy because I already had them pretty well written and edited by Fahey and others. And so put them all together. But then his publishing company came back and said, well, this is good, but we'd like it to be in the form of a memoir. So that made it, turned it into work again. Yeah, I actually liked it better just as short stories.
Yeah.
But wasn't quite so egocentric and all that. But,
I don't find it very egocentric.
Well, good.
Yeah.
I don't feel right just writing about myself, but all of my stories, I was there. So that's
the only... You were the one who was there. Yeah. And sometimes it was just you in a burrow. You might be in the Quakeys trying to pull Quakey trees in a makeshift buggy rig.
Oh,
remember that story.
Yep. No, I about killed myself training animals a few times.
Yeah.
Going way beyond my ability and theirs. Hmm. Pushing them too hard. But, yeah.
Difference with donkeys and horses that I kind of took away with me is that donkeys are they're a little bit more cautious and think a little bit more for themselves.
They inherently, by the species, are a little bit better survivors. But they also, if you look at a donkey, it looks exactly like its wild type relative in Africa. Mm-hmm. They have not been all screwed up by selective breeding, which mostly breeds out their survival instincts so that we, a predator, can sit on their back in a kill zone and get them to cooperate with us. Mm. Donkeys haven't lost their survival instincts. That's why only donkeys and mules are used in the Grand Canyon for the most part. Okay. They won't run off a cliff. They don't do stuff. If you stick with your animal, you're going to be okay.
Right.
So, and there's all kinds of people or stories from, old war vets that were on mule corps that say their animals had a sixth sense, and if you followed your mule instead of telling them where to go, you were going to live. You were going to survive. Mm-hmm. Trust the animal.
Yeah.
And I found that to be true a lot.
Okay. We'd have a lot of ground to cover in the next few minutes, but the book takes you, of course, from Texas up to Colorado And then also spent quite a bit of time in Mexico, and I've been to some Mexican rodeos.
Sure. Yeah. No, I actually rode a bull in one of those Mexican rodeos on my 47th birthday.
Was that your 47th birthday?
Yeah, it was my 47th birthday. So
that's, I remember it, you mentioning it was your birthday in the book.
Yep.
You got kind of an easy ride to begin with.
To begin with, yeah. Yeah, my bull went down in the chutes, and anyway, it turned into a pretty interesting ride. I actually had seen a rodeo cowboy on one of the, you know, professional bull riding shows. It was a Las Vegas thing. And it wasn't, it was one of the clowns that was keeping a bull off the cowboy. Mm. And he ran just inches in front of the horns, jumped up on the fence, did like a ballerina pirouette, spun around and landed on that bull's back.
Wow.
And arms out, rode it halfway across the arena.
And you kind of mimicked that.
Yeah, I got chased after the bull fell down, and I pretended like I was riding a bull that was laying down. Then I jumped off. He jumped up, chased everybody out of the arena. I got up on the fence, and he rammed the fence right below me, turned around. I'm like, I've seen this movie. And I just jumped off the fence, and I was on him, and I rode him about halfway across the arena before he dumped me off. So
yeah. Man, a lot of fun. And another story, I'll just paraphrase it because we are running out of time, but it's Courthouse Wash, and you had to track down your donkeys who escaped that night, and you were in nothing but your skivvies.
Yeah, I did. I left camp then, and they were going to be pretty close by, and there's nobody out in the desert in late July. It was hotter than hell, so I figured they'd be close by, and it, like 10 miles later, way down Courthouse Wash where the highway or the road crosses in the park, and bunch of pissed off rangers and cowboys trying to catch my mules. So
that's right.
I got on one and we had a little chase up the wash.
You had a chase up the wash and you got the heck out of there.
Yep.
Folks, we are going to go into bird now, but we're going to wrap up here in about a minute and a half. You'll have to pick up a copy of Dances with Donkeys by Jim Duke, and I encourage you to go see Jim yourself this Saturday again at White River Books, 6:30 p.m. And you could hear a little bit more about these stories. There's a heck of a lot of them. Jim, any words you'd like to share with the Roaring Fork Valley listeners before we let you go? You got about a minute.
Take some time to sit on your ass. That's about it.
All right. Well, we could do that. Yep. And I'm going to be sitting on my ass at White River Books on Saturday. Again, check out Dances with Donkeys. I think Roaring Fork Valley readers particularly will have a lot that will resonate with them. And thank you for tuning in to Everything Under the Sun today. Thank you, Arthur, for manning the board once again. And Skylar for being here as well.
Happy to be here. Amazing stories.
And thank you, Jim.
Yeah. You shouldn't have asked me to tell a story. I took up too much time.
Pleasure, man.
It was a pleasure for sure. Cool to hear.
Look out in Soper Sun, too. We'll have more Jim Duke originals, I'm sure, coming down the pike.
Hopefully.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.